You're listening to the State of Our Football Nation on FNR.
Well, it's that time of the week, an opportunity to catch up with Josh Parrish via Zoom, as we have been doing for quite some time, because it's lockdown Australia. But we have a special guest in our very own little Zoom cell. His name is Danny Townsend, and he's the managing director of a fantastic new outfit called APL. Josh, you know what APL stands for?
I do indeed, but the question is, are we spelling it with an A, or are we spelling it with a full stop and a backslash?
Well, the man there who's joined us, I think has all the answers. So ask the question again, Josh.
So, Australian Professional Leagues, with a plural on the end of the leagues. Where did this idea come about? Because I imagine it's been in the works for some time, Danny.
Yeah, it has, Josh. It's one of those things. When we took the keys to the car off the FA in January of this year, we wanted to affect change. You know, there's no point us continuing to do the same thing in this game and expecting a different outcome. We need to change things up. We need to have a crack. And if we're gonna make some mistakes along the way, we get that. But we're prepared to take those risks. I think where the naming convention change came from was that we sat back and we looked at what was the genesis of the A-League, the naming of it. Where did it come from? What did it mean? What did it stand for? And the information we got was that the A stood for Australia, which makes sense. It stood for A quality, A grade, the A elite competition for football in Australia, which made sense. And then we looked into the genesis of the W League and we went, where did the W League name came from? It was a real short bit of work. It was W stands for woman. And we thought, well, if the A in A-League stands for all those wonderful things, why is it that those wonderful things are only attached to the men's game and not the women's game?
Brother.
And we felt, you know what? We need to change the brand architecture of the sport. If we're going to elevate the women's game, you need young, aspiring female athletes to feel as though they are part of a football movement that puts the same value on their football than they do their male counterparts. And that's what we did. And, you know, I think it's, you know, been really well received the last 24 hours. We've been overwhelmed with support for doing it. But I think the other thing I'd say, Josh, is that we're not going to be defined by a name change. Changing naming conventions is easy. It's what you do then once you've done that will define the commitment you're making to the code. And we've got a huge amount of plans in place. We've announced some of those, and we're going to announce more down the track as we continue to try and reinvent the professional game here in Australia.
Well, let's talk about that. You've made a fantastic decision. It's a bit of back to the future, because if you've been around long enough, like myself, I've seen 10 do this before, but never quite like this. Because let me get this right. CBS Viacom, who own 10, have come on board and they've done more than just sign a deal. They've actually got a bit of skin in the game.
Yeah.
And that for me is the game changer.
Yeah.
Because that means they've got to take some of the risk.
Yeah. Look, what was interesting, right? When we went through this, there was a lot of competitive tension in the market, particularly as you know, the media landscape shifts into that direct-to-consumer focus. And when we sat down with Viacom, CBS, and Network 10 and their leadership, you know, they looked across the table and said, we believe in your sport. We love your vision for your sport. And we want to make it the number one sport in our network. And I sat back and I thought, I don't think I've ever heard that before in football, and they've been true to their word, everything they've done. And as we worked through the deal construct, it was like, you know what are the things that have frustrated or constrained us in the past? It's been not being aligned totally with the aspirations and objectives of your broadcaster, so therefore they would make decisions that were in their best interest. Fair enough, they wrote a check, they had the rights to do what they wanted. What we wanted was a partner that was in the trenches with us, because they were business partners. And that's why the shareholding for Viacom CBS in APL was a really symbolic thing. As much as it was great for us to have an organisation of their scale and entity and enterprise and experience involved, it was what it said about their commitment to football which made this thing work. And they, like I said, they've been fantastic to deal with. Foxtel were a fantastic partner for the game, don't get me wrong. You know, we wouldn't have the A-Leagues if it wasn't for Foxtel's commitment to football. But you know, this is the next phase and we're excited by it.
But the difference has been with Foxtel, as we found out over the years, over that 15-year spread, subscription television in this country is taking a long time to grow. I mean, it's going to grow right now because there are a whole bunch of new subscription and streaming services that 5 years ago didn't exist. The technology is moving at a rapid rate, and goodness knows what's coming tomorrow. But the streaming is getting better. The content required to fill this streaming space will need to be better than it's ever been, more exciting, more adventurous than ever been. And that means you need to bring in a whole new crew. The content making crew, is this part of the APL psyche model? Have you guys got your head around that too? Because I'm a huge MLB fan and have been for 20 odd years. And I watched them with that fantastic little content streaming platform they invented about 14, 15 years ago. And they gave me the game every day. They gave me a high definition game, highlights, mini package, whatever I wanted. And then behind the scene, posts the game and everything else that I required. Now, no other sports touched it to the level that these guys have done it, Major League Baseball in America. Now, America, Viacom, CBS would know those guys inside out. Are we going to see some of that imagination, some of that creativity coming to the APLs?
George, I spent the best part of my career working in the US and did a lot of work with MLB and saw a lot of their great work and others in this space. And the one thing I know for sure is the only way to truly engage fans is through content. And the challenge we've had in our game is that there's been a vacuum of football content in Australia. And part of the APL strategy, and I think the most critical part of our strategy, is what we're launching before the season, which is the one-stop shop for football in Australia digitally. It is the biggest single investment football has made in itself. It's a $30 million investment in digital infrastructure and data infrastructure that will serve the football fan. And it won't be the home of Australian football. It'll be Australia's home of football. And what it will deliver is content, audiovisual, editorial. It'll be everything that you need. And part of the reason we're doing that and investing in what we call APL Studios is ensuring that by organising the football community in one place, we're able to deliver them utility in their everyday lives and how they consume football. If you do that, they'll keep coming back. How do you get them in the first place? It's a honeypot. You've got to put honey in the honeypot, and content is the honey. You put great content in there, you serve it, you understand that fan, you understand their preferences, that you might, your local club might be the Bentley Greens, you're a South Melbourne NPL fan, you love the Melbourne Victory, you love the Socceroos, you love Arsenal and Barcelona, and your favourite player is Messi. Okay, if we know that about you, your experience inside this digital environment will be that every day. It'll help you understand where your kid's playing on Saturday, where who's bringing the oranges, who's washing the shirts. It'll do all that, right? So it's a complete digital transformation of our game that will enable football fans to be served like they should have been served for the last 10 years. But we haven't had that platform to do that. And this is where the investment was key.
I was going to say the technology just wasn't there when we needed to make those bold, brave decisions. But Danny Townsend, that technology is right there. And now we've got Paramount Plus through the auspices of CBS Viacom. We've got their 10 play, which allows us to see all the games streaming. And, of course, something else, a Saturday night dedicated to the game, free to air. Let me just say that again, free to air, something the game hasn't had, unless the early days of SBS, and even then the challenge was what's 0-28. They didn't realize what it was in those days. So this is a fantastic new platform, and it's national.
Yeah, I think the Saturday night was really critical for us, both for the men's league on the Saturday night and the women on the Sunday, is ensuring that we carve out a window in the free-to-air environment that's about football. And from 6:30 on a Saturday night till 10 o'clock, it'll be football night on main channel, free to air, right? And that's amazing, and that's going to be great for us, and that's going to continue to sort of open up the game to more people and bring us closer to the mainstream. But what it will also do, importantly, is the machine that is the network will be behind the game. And you only got to turn on the project or, you know, the news on First at Five News or their morning shows. They're surfacing A-League players W League players, stars. They're creating intrigue into our game that we haven't had before. And so it's the live experience is great, but what you do around the 90 minutes with your media partner is really what's going to give us greater scale. And they've been amazing so far, and our season's not even close to starting. So what it will be like when the season kicks off, you know, we should all be licking our lips.
The thing I like about the Saturday nights, Danny, is we've now got a simultaneous kickoff there with highlights of the other game on free-to-air as well. So instead of this kind of rigid mentality of every game has to kick off at a different time so somebody can sit down and Clockwork Orange glue their eyes open so that they see every A-League game in a weekend, which I will admit to having done, but not everyone's like me, right? So it's event television, and that's something really valuable, I think, for advertisers and stuff. Now, when you've got all this on-demand content, is having Saturday nights with the simultaneous kickoff there, where you know Saturday night is football night; it's all happening. And even if you're not a fan of you know the teams that are playing in the main televised game, there's still football going on, and you get that conversation going as well on social media.
Absolutely. It was, and this was purely their idea. They came to us and said, we'd love to do that. We were like, wow, if you think about from a club perspective, the marquee fixture for you to attract fans to your stadium is a 7:30 kickoff on a Saturday night. Under the old deal, we were only allowed one of those. Every week now, two clubs are going to be able to take that prime slot, which is great for television, but it's also great for the fans in stands. So it'll help us on the club front as well, generating you know revenues out of the match day experience. So look, there's a lot to it. I think the other real key piece for us is going back to celebrating what's great about football. And one of the things that I've observed over the years, having you know been back in the old NSL days and into now, is that you know we've almost been a bit apologetic about football and where it sits in the landscape of sport in Australia, and we've allowed ourselves to get pushed to the periphery. Why? Because we have been a game that was built on waves of migrant populations to Australia. That's in our DNA. That's a part of our fabric, and that's allowed us to be pushed to the extremities of the more call it Anglo heritage Australian sports of AFL, rugby league, and cricket. And we've been sort of somewhat apologetic. And then when you don't own something in terms of an identity, you then get compared to the incomparable. In this case, they go, well, I love football, but I don't watch the A-Leagues because they're not as technical as the Premier League. They're not as entertaining as La Liga. So what? You know, it's our football. It's Australia's football. Yeah. Let's grab an identity for that, and then let's be proud of it and get everyone behind it. And at the same time, let's celebrate what's amazing about our sport is that we lead all sports in diversity, gender, nationality, sexuality. Football is ahead of the rest. That is the biggest strength. And the face of modern Australia today is not a 55-year-old white Anglo male. It is a football fan. 90-odd percent of new Australians come from football-first countries. When they assimilate to this country, they look at AFL and go, I have no idea what that is. They look at rugby and go, why are those big guys lying on top of each other? And then they go, thank God, football is here. Mm. And we've pushed them to the periphery. This is a way of bringing them in. And I think what was seen as one of our greatest challenges, now the way society has evolved, is one of our greatest strengths. And you'll see a huge amount of our marketing and activity around how we really celebrate that multicultural history that we have.
I think the other thing that we haven't had enough of, quality grounds, and we've had to share them. And, of course, as you know, limited spaces meant being pushed out of winter into summer and all that sort of stuff. And I've noticed now with the return of Bank West, what a spectacular facility that is. And when COVID opens the doors again, I will come up and have a look and enjoy. But I'm hearing now that one of our major new sponsors, the Commonwealth Bank, is going to be able to put some of its livery and what's it going to be called? Combank Stadium,
I believe, yes.
Ooh, and it's what, tomorrow?
I'm not sure when.
October 1.
Is it? There you go.
I think it's October 1. So that's super exciting that you've got – everyone was concerned that when Hyundai stepped away that we wouldn't have, you know, major companies putting their hand up and wanting to be part of the story of this new era of football.
I think that we were about to announce some major partners for the game over the coming weeks, which are going to be fantastic and really demonstrate that corporate Australia believes in our game. You know, we are the number one sport for participation we've said it for years, we've said it to death. There's more people playing football. If you sum up AFL, rugby league and cricket, they don't sum to our participation base. But we've done a bad job connecting them to our game. And I think the investment we're making in the digital infrastructure, the investment in content, the partnership with Ten, the rebrand, the commitment to marketing. I said to someone the other day, you can't change this game with one movement, one decision. It has to be a series of things that you're doing to rehabilitate it and to reconnect it to its fan. And I think with football, we were such a stakeholder-focused sport. We were so busy talking about governance and federations and all this other stuff that the powers that be lost faith in, or they lost focus on what was important. Mm-hmm. And what's important in any industry is your customer. And in our case, in our industry, our customers are our fans. So you've got to put your fan first about every decision you make. You think, am I doing something that's going to help make my fan experience better? And that's what APL is all about. We are 100% focused on fans. And I think the fans will see that, yeah, talk is cheap, but we'll be delivering an experience for those fans that they've never had before.
Speaking of the fans, Danny, I want to talk about the change from W League to A League Women. How do you anticipate the fans will colloquially refer to this league? Because personally, I'm not sure the kind of colloquialism, the dub, is going to die anytime soon.
I said to the Ladies League, who I spoke to this morning, who love the dub, and like I do, love the dub. There's no reason why the dub should go. We haven't taken women away. It's still A League Women. They can keep the dub. I love the dub. I'm all for it.
So it'll require some, I think, discipline from media organisations and from the league itself to keep those naming conventions, because it's going to, I think, take some real cultural shift for people to go the extra distance of calling the A-League A-League Men. How long do you think that's going to actually take?
What you'll see, we've done a lot of work in this, obviously, because as you go through these sort of brand architecture changes, you need to consider all these things. And there's two different lenses you look at this in. It's in the written, it's in the spoken, and it's in the visual. Uh-huh. So the in situ stuff in visual, I don't need to say A-League Men as a commentator when there's men clearly on the field.
Yeah,
correct.
I don't say A-League Women when there's clearly women playing. I don't need to put A-League Men on a shirt when it's a man's shirt. I don't need to put A-League Women on their shirt when it's clearly a female kit. So there's parts where you won't need to use it because the visuals will tell you what you're watching. It's when you're reporting an editorial mainly where you need to say, well, the results in the A-League Men were Sydney FC beat the Wanderers 10-0. I just had to throw that in. I couldn't help myself.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
Robbo will be after us, letting you get away with it.
So we've thought through all those things. And look, like all these things, it's funny. We talked about logos, and there's always sort of positives and negative skews on people's opinions on logos. And I remember when the Juventus logo came out, and like that, it was getting pilloried from all corners going, what, a big J? Like that's, and the heritage, the words Juventus and the Italian flag, it's gone. Like, how could you do that? And then a year later, it was winning design awards. And it's now considered a benchmark for way, you know, clubs should rebrand. And I think we're a bit similar. You know, when you make these changes, your initial thought is, do I really like that? Oh, what about this? What about that? And then time basically etches it into your mind, and your opinion changes and the way you talk about it changes. And that's what we're about. It's about shifting behavior. If you don't provide a circuit breaker that shifts behavior, it won't change. And I said to the Ladies League this morning, we were talking about that, going, oh, we don't want to lose the W League. I said, what's more important is the six-year-old female who's playing at the moment, who I don't want to in 10 years' time have to explain to that six-year-old who's 16 why the A in A-League doesn't have any relevance to women.
Yeah,
I want that six-year-old to grow up knowing that her football's as important as the men's football. Mm. And if we achieve that by this change, then it's served its purpose.
Yes, it's one very solid brick. It's like that wonderful line, every journey starts with the first step. And it appears to us that the Australian professional leagues have done just that. They've put a brick in the wall, and it's the first very important brick. They've taken a huge step, and you've also done what every major business that wants to succeed and create something brand new, you've taken a risk.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredible. Is there a future fund for the APLs to maybe start doing and looking after all those players who have a career and maybe an injury cuts them short? Is there something like that that we can look forward to seeing maybe? A component to add to the game.
Yeah, it's interesting you should say that. It's part of the CBA we just closed out with the PFA, which was, you know, in my opinion, and I've done three of them now, was by far the most progressive and one that felt like a genuine partnership. You know, the PFA do an amazing job representing, you know, the most critical part of our product, which is the players. And the partnership that they went into that with around, you know, being what are we going to do together as the owners of the game and the players that represent the owners of the game in the product? How do we ensure that ecosystem is as financially sustainable both now and into the future as it can be? And that means the players that are playing now and the players that will inevitably come to an end in there that happens, and how do we support them? And part of the CBA actually deals with that. So we'll go into more detail when we announce it. But, yeah, there is absolutely commitments there to look at how we transition players out, how we deal with players that have to transition out earlier than they would have thought because of injury. You know, I've seen a lot of it, and how we educate our players is part of that as well, in saying, look, there's financial support, but probably most importantly, it's education and getting them thinking about what life after football means for them and how they best prepare themselves for that.
And you spoke at the beginning of this conversation, Danny, about how, you know, design and words, essentially talk is cheap, but actions have to come after that. So talking about the equality of the A-League women, how are we progressing along the path of getting a full home and away season and a more fully professional competition?
Yeah, look, it's an important part of our roadmap for the A-League women. One of the, if you think about where we're at, we've announced expansion of three clubs. So Wellington Phoenix joining this upcoming season, and then West United and Central Coast Mariners. So more opportunity, more games, more opportunities for players, longer season. Tick. It's not home and away yet, but it's on the path, and we're committed to getting there. The other one for me, which was really important, was the facilities and standards, which we wrote into the PFA CBA lately and announced that recently. We were already a long way down that path, but memorialising that and holding people accountable to that is really important, and we've done that. The other thing that I'm most excited about is the APL Club Championship. I think for us, you know, when we announced that, which just if you don't recall it, it's for the first time we've got a trophy to award the best professional football club in this country. And that is, we sum the results of the A-League men and the A-League women together. So it's important that every club, every APL club, commits to putting everything into their women's program, because the 3 points in the A-League women is as important as 3 points as the A-League men. And the other important part about that is it will encourage fan behaviour to support their club, not support the men's team in their club, but support their club. I want the Cove at Sydney FC to turn up for an A-League men game to support our men's team, and turn up for an A-League women match to support our women's team. Because one thing we know fans love is silverware. And we know clubs love success over other clubs. So internally, I've already seen Steve Corica and Ante Juric collaborating and going, okay, well, hang on, we're now in this together to win a trophy and crown Sydney FC as the best professional football club in the country. Not the best men's team, not the best women's team, but the best football club. And that's what our fans should really want to get behind. And that will help grow more interest in the female side of the sport.
Double headers, Danny, double headers. The women or the men first or the women second, I don't care. That would be super exciting. Can you imagine a derby day? The women have taken the points, or the men have taken the points. Can the women now back it up? And this is shades of Formula One, isn't it?
It is. It's someone said the other day, it's like the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah. You know,
if one of your teams doesn't win, you got another chance, right?
And look, it puts enormous pressure on everybody.
It does. And look, for me, the level of interest that it will generate, I think, you know, even we got contacted by FIFA going, wow, this is the first league in the world that's done this. And, you know, I've been contacted by other sports going, geez, I wish we genuinely had a gender agnostic sport that would allow us to do that. So we've got that opportunity, and we're taking that opportunity and launching it. So it's going to be cool.
I wanted to go back to the logo because did you foresee the kind of guerrilla marketing that's taken off on Twitter with people actually, you know, replacing the A's in their first names and surnames with the dot and the backslash? Is this something that was, you know, listed as a perk of the new design that you had your own homespun emoji for the competition, or is this just an organic happy accident?
It's classic football, isn't it, right? Like, if there's one thing you can count on with football fans, they'll find a way to create something that you didn't think of and drive it as their own. And it's cool. Like, when we saw that happen, Ant Hearn, the chief commercial officer, and I, he was like a kid in the light shop. He goes, have you seen what they're doing on Twitter? They're putting the dot and the backslash. If you got A in your name, they're changing it. And we're going, cool. Like, that's, yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, like I said, people have different opinions on logos, but yeah, we don't take ourselves too seriously. It's about, yeah, if we can connect in any way. You know, there was the Adelaide Construction Company that's got a very similar logo, and they would, and I spoke to their CEO today and we had a laugh. It's like he's never had so many hits on his website as a building company, and I said, I'll send you an invoice, but for creating all the publicity. But yeah, he's a great guy, and these are just fun things that we can't take ourselves too seriously with.
Speaking of construction, there's a tremendous opportunity now to take something that's been with us for a number of years now. I'm talking about the FFA Cup. Is this the time now to give it a brand new name?
Yeah, look, that's one thing that in the unbundling is still sits with the FA. We don't have any influence over the FA Cup apart from playing in it. But look, I do believe the FA are looking at rebranding that, given it's, you know, they've gone through their name change. So I'm not sure what they're thinking, but I'm sure they'll come up with something great.
So is there a post on Saturday night? Is there a post-game program to sort of go over what's happened on this Saturday night? And will the same happen for the women's, the A-League women's?
Yeah, absolutely. There'll be a pre-game, halftime, post-game show, all that stuff that we're all familiar with across other sports. And I think you'll see the same. On the programming around all of the A-Leagues, part of APL Studios is actually creating that content that wasn't there. Those midweek wrap-up shows, those highlight shows, those debates, you know, you're getting different cohorts of our fan base engaged. We'll do shows for the younger fans on the mixture of culture and boots and, you know, music and all those things that that fan cohort want. Because we've got that flexibility with the studio to do that, you'll see a lot more content. And it's not just about the studio. It's about the ability to surface it to fans. And with the digital platform that we'll have, we'll be able to ensure that our content is seen by the different sort of pockets of fans in different demographics. So, yeah, lots of big plans. We may have seen, we hired Richard Bayless out of Optus Sport to lead that charge for us. And he's extremely talented and amazingly passionate about football. So he's a great storyteller, and he'll tell great stories on behalf of our sport.
And you've got the E-League as well, haven't you?
We have. The E-League's there. George, I can see that'd be right up your alley. You'd be lining up for that.
But we've actually got a question in the comments about that. Is the E-League part of the rebrand? What's it going to be called? Don't know yet?
Not yet. The only reason it's not yet is we've kind of come up with something a little bit different for that. We're working on that separately. But yeah, we won't go into that yet because we want a separate unveil for that. It's going to be a little bit different.
Nice one. Another
Youth League?
Yes, that's one of the other questions. Someone's asking about the Youth League.
Yes. The A-League's youth, you mean?
Sorry,
yes.
A-League youth.
A-League youth, yes.
Yeah. So look, I think the one thing that we all agree, particularly us clubs, were that the previous format of the Y-League as it was not fit for purpose. You know, having eight games a season is not a genuine national youth competition. And you know, in our blueprint, APFCA predating the unbundling was that, we have Yeah, really big plans for the A-League's youth. We think it, particularly with the ability for us to surface the content. You know, one of my challenges with the Y-League, as it were, is you could never watch any games. It was never broadcast anywhere. Mm-hmm. It was sort of this competition that happened that you might pick up a score now and then, but you never really could see the next generation coming through. You couldn't engage with it. With our platform, we've got the ability to surface that content and broadcast every Y-League match. So you'll see a format that we're working on at the moment. It's being sort of tested through different technical directors at different clubs to ensure that it orientates well with the NPL, because I think it's important that we still have that pathway of, you know, the SAP, your local community club, SAP programs into the NPL, you know, potentially into your A-League club academy, into your NPL, and then into the A-League's youth, and then onto the A-League's men and women. So we really want to make sure that pathway is coherent. So that's why we're not rushing into a structure yet, but rest assured, it'll come back with a vengeance, and it's going to be a much, much more compelling league.
You're watching State of Our Football Nation on FNR. Josh Parrish, George Denikian, and our very special guest, the Managing Director of the brand new Australian professional leagues, Danny Townsend. And here's the kicker. You talked about the youth league and how many people missed the opportunity to be able to identify the next generation of talent. Well, we've seen, Josh and I have seen, in let alone the last year, the last 2 or 3 years, two of the most exciting players to enter the A-League. One was Daniel Azani, who came out of the youth team at Melbourne City. And the next one was the guy who came out of Sydney City. You know him very well. We gave him a pass and he came to Melbourne. And what a transition and what a development and what a fantastic journey for that young man to end up with the Socceroos at the Olympics. Well done, Danny.
Yeah, well, look, that's a sore point for us. But anyway, we won't go there. Look, yeah, one thing is interesting. With all the explosion of young talent in the league last year, there was a narrative floating around that it was because of COVID. It was because the clubs couldn't afford to bring in more foreign players or whatever it might be. And I just didn't prescribe to that theory, because I've seen these young players coming through. And what they're coming through now after having the majority of their football education in A-League academies. Mm. So when you look at Callum Neuenhoff, you look at Tills and other players, like the majority of their coaching since they were 10, 11, 12 has been in an A-League professional environment. Whereas 4 years ago, those academies were 2 years old. So we were getting our academy guys were coming in at age 17. So they'd had most of their football tuition at their local club, not in an elite environment. And there was this gap between the AIS closing and the A-League clubs launching their academy programs. And the one thing that we're going to see, and I think you're seeing it with the way that, you know, the Oli Roos and others, youth teams performing, going to World Cups like they did in Brazil and performing well, is that back in the AIS, there was one cohort of players that were accessing that amazing tuition, right? Mm. There was probably, I don't know how many people there, it was probably 20 per age group, I'm guessing. What we have today is that you've got 12 A-League clubs with 12 academies that have 20 people, kids per cohort. Do the math. You know, that's a lot more kids getting access to that high-caliber coaching. So the chances of us producing more talented young Australian footballers is obvious. And that's why these players are all starting to hit the big time. And often, you know, I had Ryan Teague and Cameron Papillon, two players that went to the Under-17 World Cup. Ryan was the captain. Cam played really well. I think they went to the quarterfinals. And those two never, well, I think Teague played 5 minutes of A-League football, gave away a pen, and then got taken to the first division in Portugal. And Cam Perpignan went straight, didn't even come to the A-League, went straight to Brighton in the Premier League. So these kids are almost coming through at a level that are too good. They just go straight round us. And that's great. We should celebrate that. That's something that I think, in a way, our game's been, again, apologetic about. So once they leave our shores, the A-League ignores them and go, well, they're gone and they're not ours anymore. Whereas what we want to do through the digital environment is follow them, follow what they're doing, see how great they're doing. Talk about the fact they're a product of our league.
And it's our pedigree.
If that makes up, if I've got a club, a player that turns up at the training ground at Sydney FC to sign and goes, I've made it. I've got to the pinnacle of my career. I'm putting him back in the car and sending him back because I want a player that sees Sydney FC as the stepping stone for greatness to go to play for Real Madrid or Barcelona because they can. If they're good enough, they can. And that's what's great about our sport. So let's not try and shy away from that. Again, let's own that. Let's celebrate that. And that's something you'll see a lot more of as well.
And it's only really passionate volunteers that have kept track of all of the Australian youngsters keeping, you know, scoring goals in the lower leagues in Europe and so forth. There's a guy called Damien Davies, who I used to do a show here with, called Aussies Abroad on FNR, and he still sends out his monthly email blast with basically a spreadsheet of all of the Australians playing in overseas leagues, men and women. As far as I know, he's one of the only people, you know, keeping that sort of track of it. So it'd be great to see some highlights on the hub, you know, like... I think there's a channel called Oz Goals that, you know, got taken down due to copyright because they were just clipping stuff up from overseas leagues every time an Australian player scored. It'd be great to have that stuff sort of officially licensed and through the league app for everyone to keep track of these youngsters once they're gone after a few good games.
I can see Richard Bayliss making a note.
Totally. You know, it's so funny, Josh. The more conversations we have about the football hub that we're building and with fans around what they'd love to see, and the opportunities are endless because there's so much great stuff that doesn't see the light of day because there's nowhere to show it or there's no one to go buy it. Because your point around those rights cost money. You know, we're going to generate an economy here that's going to be able to afford to buy those rights and surface it on that platform. And that's something that I think, you know, this thing is going to evolve. What we launch next month will be the beginning. And it's only going to get better. So, yeah, all those ideas are fantastic. And hopefully Rich is listening.
Danny Townsend, 2 years' time, we've got a World Cup down under. That's going to give you 2 years to push some fantastic young talent and give them every opportunity to shine and get showcased like never before. So we've got a great story to tell.
Absolutely.
Let's be brave. Let's be brave.
George, you make a good point. One of the things that we're really cognizant of is that that's going to be an amazing 30 days, right? Oh. 30 days in 2023. The FIFA and the FA will do a phenomenal job because Australia do these things fantastically well. But we're going to wake up the day after the Women's World Cup final and women's football will still be here.
Correct.
So what are we doing between now and then to ensure that when that show comes to town, the halo effect it creates takes football to the next level, not drags it out of a hole that it might be in because we have neglected it. So you'll see all the changes we're making are all about saying, let's get out ahead of that. Let's ensure the A-League Women is a top three professional women's football league in the world. And then when the World Cup comes, it elevates it to one or two because we have the ability. It doesn't matter how much money we throw at the APL, the A-League men, it's never going to be a top 10 league in the world. Fact.
Correct. Yep.
We're not far off being able to say that the A-League women is one of the best professional women's competitions in the world. So
Great breeding ground.
With a bit of love and a bit of investment, it will genuinely be, for a long time to come, a top three women's football league in the world. And we've got and the World Cup's going to play a role in that, but we can't let the World Cup wash over us and not benefit.
Speaking of benefits, the new stadium in Sydney, how far away are we?
Yeah, it'll be opening September of next year. It seems it's on track. So Sydney FC have one more season of nomadic existence, but we've enjoyed the time away from Moore Park, but I think all of our fans are licking their lips at the thought of getting back to our spiritual home into a world-class facility and getting back in behind the club.
All right, Danny, you've been very, very, very generous with your time. We could sit here talking all night about the possibilities, but congratulations.
Write them down, send your message.
Absolutely. Congratulations on, you know, the new logo, the new leagues. All of the ideas that have been put into motion behind the scenes have got a lot of Australian football fans who have been a bit beleaguered of late, a lot of hope, and with that hope comes expectation. So good luck for the new year.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. We've got some real momentum and we're proud of where we are, but we've got a lot of work to do. So thank you, guys. Appreciate you covering us.
question without notice. Are you a Ted Lasso fan?
I love Ted Lasso.
No, don't get him started.
Because well, use the word hope. You know what they say about hope.
Yeah, true. Ted Lasso. So, one of my ideas is to bring Roy Kent down as a commentator.
Oh, please do. Oh, how fantastic. Look, that well, there's every chance, isn't there? There's every chance we can make that happen.
I'm working on it.
Oh, well, long may it continue. Keep kicking the goals, Danny. Thank you once again, as Josh said, to take the opportunity to join us and give us so much of your time and take us through some of the many steps that the game is setting itself to take over the next few years, and to have Viacom, CBS, and through its auspices, 10 in Australia, with its many platforms, not only the mainstream terrestrial platform, but the streaming platforms, 10 Play and also Paramount Plus. Super exciting stuff, and we cannot wait. How far away is the season now? Just tell
November me. November 19. November 19 is the season start. So
you've spoken to all the premiers, have you?
Oh, yeah, they're all in my little black book. None of them are taking my calls, but hey, we're
And I love the idea that we've started with a conferencing.
Yes.
So we can get past this travel challenge that's really knocked sport around over the last couple of years. Very shrewd and very smart. We wish you every success.
Awesome. Thanks, fellas. See you later.
Danny Townsend on FNR and State of Our Football Nation. He's given us something to think about, hasn't he?
He has indeed. So much potential for the game here, as we know. But to have somebody at the helm who sort of understands the new landscape that we're living in for media and isn't living 5 to 10 to 15 years behind the times with his
Correct
outlook
way.
Is very
Correct
refreshing.
Way. And Correct way.
You know, yeah. Danny Townsend has been in charge of the most successful A-League outfit and W-League. They've been very good as well. The most successful A-League team of all time with this Sydney FC dynasty of late. So I think, you know, the rest of the league can take a couple of leaves out of Sydney FC's book and the way they run things. And, you know, he's a perfect person to have as the managing director.
And, Josh, one of the things that emerged from that discussion, that investment that the APL is making, the Australian Professional Leagues, in the game. They're spending something like $30 million to build a content maker that will drive the game and take us to the next level. And they're talking a language now that is for tomorrow. It's not yesterday, it's tomorrow. And that's super exciting. That's what you touched on a moment ago.
Yeah, 100%. And they're not going to limit themselves to, you know, just their football and their footage. We can look to all of football, and any kind of, you know, link to an Australian context can make up part of that. And I think the game has been at its strongest when we've been able to knit together in some way, shape or form football's international aspect and the domestic club game. You can argue that the golden years of the Foxtel A-League deal was when the Premier League rights belonged to Fox Sports as well. So it was essentially, you know, Premier League interest subsidising the A-League. We know Paramount and Viacom CBS are in the market for those rights again. That could be a potential game changer if they end up getting them.
I was just going to say, notice I didn't broach that subject because I thought it was too close and I don't think he would open the door and give us a clue.
Yeah, it's not really his business either, you know. It's the
broadcast partners. I put it to you that it's CBS Viacom would be very quietly stalking and watching what's going on, and they have the wherewithal, if they want it, to make the EPL a big part of the next 8 to 10 years on 10. Yeah, can you 100%. Imagine?
It would
can
be.
Can you imagine?
That would be a massive difference maker, especially if the price of Paramount Plus stays as it is, and we've already got that special deal with A-League memberships
through
to
the
get
clubs,
it for a bit
yeah.
cheaper.
Yeah.
Which is a great innovation. So that would be huge to get so many new subscribers and potentially new viewers on the product. But, you know, we've got a season to play in the meantime. It's not going to be a logistically easy one, or not as easy as we'd hoped. So particularly
but
Perth Glory.
They're showing they're resourceful. They're showing they've taken the courage, and we're going to see conference football in the opening month. Is that correct?
I think so, and Perth Glory aren't best pleased about the travel plans and what that will entail and asking for a bit of help. Tony Sage in The Australian the other day. So, you know, they're in an an unenviable position, but it hasn't stopped them, as we hear from the transfer rumours, of looking at Daniel Sturridge as a potential marquee option, which, I mean, wouldn't that be remarkable?
It would be, and he's one of those guys who could light up the A-League. He has the game. I still think he has the quality to light up the league, and it would be quite something. I wouldn't like to see it in purple because it's too dazzling. But the tyranny of distance has always been a challenge in all sport in this country. It's through COVID, it's been given yet another shunt. It's going to be very interesting to watch for the next couple of months. But as Danny alluded to, exciting times ahead. A new era has dawned. Now let's see how it unfolds. And Richard Bayliss, the content king from Optus, who gave us so many little options just for one game. Mm. You've got the highlights package, you've got the mini package, you've got the mega package, and you've got the full game. And I'm sure there'll be some sort of formula that would allow him to deliver that for the Australian Premier Leagues.
Yes.
And it'll be for the W League as well and the Youth League.
Yeah, the A-League Women and the A-League Youth, George. We've got to get our heads around the new names, time for everybody.
And then the A-League 2.
Maybe. Or yes. I'm not sure. I mean, this is the thing. Is the National Second Division part of the A-Leagues? Because they won't be operating under the APL's jurisdiction, at least not to begin with. It'll be an FFA venture to start with, or that's how AAFC envisages it. So it could be entirely separate from that branding. Maybe they'll stick with the orange peel that we're used to.
Listen, they say division is death. I'm seeing this tree or this totem pole getting taller and stronger and straighter. And that's very encouraging news. Speaking of encouraging, can't go without having a look back at the EPL highlights and lowlights of this past week, and some of the things that we saw through Stan, who of course showing us the European Championships. I noticed that Juventus has beaten the greatest team in the world, Chelsea, a week after they got thumped by Manchester City. And can you believe that a guy called Ronaldo managed to save Manchester United just 4 weeks after we were told that was going to be the greatest team in the EPL this year?
I did feel the first performance was a bit of an overreaction against Steve Bruce's Newcastle, but I said it at the time. But look, United were very disjointed against Villarreal this morning, and they were lucky, I felt, to get the result. But that's what happens when you sign up to a superstar being the be-all and end-all of your team. You are relying upon their brilliance to save you and win you games. And there are also drawbacks that come with that. I think in a different way, we actually saw that with PSG Manchester City on Wednesday morning, because the spaces that Lionel Messi was leaving when he was not asked to track back on that flank, almost all of Manchester City's chances were generated down that flank, including the cross that came in and led to Bernardo Silva hitting the bar from point blank range. And then the counterattacks from PSG also came down Messi's side because he was staying up there. So it led to a very open game, and it could easily have flipped the script and gone the other way. But this is what happens when you sign up to an aging superstar and all that entails.
I did see Messi, though, did track back once, make a very telling interception late in the game.
He also was given the role of draft excluder at the underneath the wall.
You opened up a can of worms there. I want that banned. No, I absolutely hate it.
Really?
Listen, it's not a circus. You don't lie down on a job. There's the game is standing up, or the only person that can lie down is the goalkeeper, right? As far as I'm concerned, this is absurd, and they should be given a yellow card if they want to go down that pathway.
Well, I guess the idea is. I guess you can blame Ronaldinho for the tactics.
Say again?
You can blame Ronaldinho for all of this. Because he famously went underneath the wall a few times, and then back in his native Brazil, playmakers with pretensions and aspirations of being the next Ronaldinho started trying it as well. And that tactic of lying underneath the wall or behind the wall along the ground originated in the Brazilian league. The Brazilian first division is when you started seeing it take hold. I remember Tim Vickery, the great South American football journalist, talking about it on the World Football Phone in once. And it's taken hold around the world. So I think indirectly it's Ronaldinho's fault.
I want a ban. I'm gonna mount a campaign. Stop lying down on the job. Football is about standing up and running, and the acrobatics and the diving can be left to the goalkeeper. The rest, ban the guy lying down for a free kick. Thank you.
It's a bit of an indignity. A bit of an indignity for a football god like Messi to be asked to lie down on the muddy pitch. I mean, surely that's beneath him. Quite literally.
Literally.
All right, George, we better wrap it up there because we've got If You Know Your History coming up straight away. A man from Vongonegal is going to talk to Paul Mavroudis about the cheery topic of death in Australian football. Stay tuned to see what that entails. But, George, it's been a delight, and a big thank you to Danny Townsend as well.
Well done, mate. Thank you very much for your assistance.
You're listening to the State of Our Football Nation on FNR.